All right, January 30th, almost into February here, getting closer and closer to the start of spring training, getting fired up. We did a 12-team head-to-head points mock draft last week, 1 week ago today. We're going to talk about, not really break down the draft round by round or anything, but lessons learned from the draft, takeaways from the draft, things that should be helpful for you when you are drafting. I'm Adam Azer. Let's go around the room and say hello. Hello, Chris Towers.
Hi.
What's up, dude?
Not much. What's up with you?
You know.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, but it's Super Bowl week, so that's fun, right, Scott White?
Oh, yeah, it's fun. It's fun. I'm going to be sucking it all in.
Are you wearing a Falcons shirt right now?
Not today, no, but I will.
Is
I will
this shirt from expose, high school as well?
This shirt is not okay. From high school. Maybe it looks like it is, but yeah, no, this one isn't. This is actually post-college, so adults only.
And hi, Heath.
Hi. I'm a little busy trying to make sure I get Brandon Moss moved up everywhere in my rankings.
Oh, to like what, top 300?
You know, he's probably a borderline top 12 first baseman now.
Oh, okay. Okay, of course. Now he's on the Royals, so put him in your sleepers column. Okay. Yeah, we'll talk briefly about Brandon Moss. Brad Miller likely going to play second base for the Rays this year. Scott took my advice on something, and he does not regret it. So, you know, maybe that means...
Believe it or not.
Yeah, people should probably take my advice more often, it seems.
Let's calm down.
Okay, so I just want to do a quick round of emails, and then we'll get into the mock draft review. So our first email is from Kevin from Philadelphia. He says, hello, Scott, Wallace, and Ramona.
Well, he had me with Scott. I'm not sure. You lost me after that.
Yeah, I'm not. Ramona, the children's book?
Beezus and Ramona? Probably not.
And yeah. Then Wallace from Pulp Fiction. I think we got it.
Okay, great. Perfect. Can you guys talk about Max Kepler? It's early, but I feel like I haven't heard much about Max Kepler. Post-hype sleeper?
Yeah, I think he counts as a post-hype sleeper. He was someone that I think... For a couple of weeks, we got pretty excited about last season when he had that little power surge, and then he went ice cold. But he's definitely someone who's going to be forgotten, has some prospect pedigree. I guess the problem there is the minor league numbers aren't really all that impressive.
This is a guy that Scott should like more than us, because he walks as much as he strikes out.
I guess with Kepler, I just don't know who he is because he came up to the majors and what he excelled at wasn't what he excelled at in the minors. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of him. And I think I can find sleepers I like more until you get into like AL only play.
He's probably not going to be. I mean, his best case scenario is he's a fifth outfielder sleeper in a mixed league, probably.
Yeah. Okay. Now he did not walk in the majors anyway.
He was very good.
He just struck out too much. Struck out too much, but he still walked at a 9% rate. That's pretty good for a rookie.
No, I was going to say not as much as he struck out. Yeah, Kepler had a 42 game streak with .289 batting average, with 14 home runs, 9 doubles, 2 triples, and then he went super cold, as Chris mentioned, .203 with 2 home runs in his last 49 games. He was worthless, but only 23 years old. And his Twitter handle is at Kepleroni. Which is pretty cool. I think, by the way, Scott Wallace and Ramona are Scott Pilgrim characters.
Oh, yeah.
Not a bad movie, Chris.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah, fun one.
I will go to bat for that movie every time.
No idea.
All right, here's an email from Austin. Let's just do this one quickly here. I think we've spoken about it a little bit, but we'll speak about it again. Austin wants to know if we can go into our thoughts on a Roto categories league that allows daily roster moves.
I think they're a lot of fun. I don't personally, I can't handle more than one of those types of leagues per year.
So, yeah, my thoughts would be don't do them.
Yeah.
No,
some people
them.
Hate them and that's okay too.
I don't like them.
I do.
Well, when you say daily roster moves, is that add drops and lineup changes?
Yeah.
Because if it's one or the other, it's fine. But if it's both, then you just get that guy in the league who just sits on the waiver wire all day long, picking up all the pitchers who are starting that night.
Yeah, you need innings minimums and maximums. You definitely do.
I like those types of leagues. I like them without innings minimums and maximums.
It's an inherent, it's a math problem. There's not enough rate categories to make up for the fact that you can spam the counting stats.
You sound like people who haven't played in this format, because you're making this problem out to be much, much worse than
it is. No, I've played in this. Excuse me. You don't know my life.
You just didn't try hard enough.
You put in some minimums and maximums, and I think the biggest strategy difference that I have is you want to roster more relief pitchers, because you don't, I don't know that you need the starting pitcher depth that you would ordinarily need in a weekly league. I would like to have at least four guys who can get me saves rather than, let's say, three, so I can win that category. That would be it.
I really enjoy them. You just have to know what you're getting into. I think it's good that we have Scott and Chris here to say that they're bad, because that lets people see the downside of them.
It's always good to have people who are right.
You don't want to get into that and then be as apparently lazy as they are and just not participate.
That's what it is.
No, Scott might not be lazy. I totally am.
I just like the right things being rewarded. If you can tweak the rules, like setting transaction limits or whatever, then that's fine. But
good
additional rules.
Good call. Transaction limits also. I usually one per day to be spread out throughout the week. So seven per week. Or if you're doing like an eight day week for the beginning of the season, or like a two week scoring period rather, during the All-Star break, that's how you guard against.
If that's the way your league wants it to go, that's fine.
That's what I recommend. All right. Next email. It's from Aaron. Hey, Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Scrooge.
We know. We get four names in there.
Yeah.
Nobody being left out.
These are, of course, famous ducks.
Every year, you guys do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. What about a stalwarts category? The mid-career guys that are consistent but drop in the rankings because they're not sexy. Who are some stalwarts that you can think of off the top of your head?
I would hope Heath and I have the same thought on this, because Heath's been banging the drum on this guy. It's Adam Jones.
Fits this category perfectly. Maybe a little too high end for what this guy's talking about with the way he ended the email.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think Adam Jones is a fine for a little lower guy. Maybe somebody like a Yonhervis Solarte.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the. This is the Alex Bregman versus Adrian Beltre debate, because they're going to go very close to each other. I think they went within two picks of each other. It was Bregman, Rendon, Beltre were the first three picks of round seven in the draft we did last week.
Also, second base is full of guys that fit into this category. Kinsler, Kipnis, Pedroia.
If I can just repeat myself again, Adrian Beltre is Adrian Beltre, but Alex Bregman could be anything. He could even be Adrian Beltre.
No one loves to cite themselves more than Chris Towers.
That is Chris's go-to line.
You got to cite experts, you know?
Loves that Family
Guy. It's a great analogy.
Yeah, but the difference is Beltre, you know, he had a big power season last year. He didn't hit 20 home runs either of the previous two seasons. He's old. There might be some downside there. Bregman could be better than Adrian Beltre.
He could. Because I don't know that I'm... I think we'd be hard pressed to see another 2016 Adrian Beltre season.
All right.
Yeah.
Home run bump. All right. So, Scott, any stalwarts that you want to bring up?
Well, the name that came to mind is higher than any of the ones you guys mentioned. So I was thinking Nelson Cruz.
No, it's relevant. You know who's kind of a stalwart? He's in Heath's umbrella at second base. DJ LeMahieu. Right?
I don't know. It's been a 2-year run where he's been a solid starter. I don't know. I hear stalwart and I think like Studley, you know, like maybe. Okay.
Yeah, that's not what he may have used the wrong word, but that's not what he meant at all.
So now you're in his mind.
Well, he very clearly qualifies it by saying a guy that just does the same thing year after year, but no one's excited about. So he falls in the rankings.
I don't think people are excited about Nelson Cruz. No. Definitely not Kinsler or Pedroia, like you were saying.
Yeah. Cole Hamels.
Salvador Perez strikes me.
Oh, Heath.
Yeah.
Heath is your biggest fan now, Adam.
That's fair. He's not a stud, but he'll be there.
Yeah, he'll be there. Alex in New York City has our last email, and he wants to know what we think about Gary Sanchez and Trevor Story as they enter their second seasons. With Sanchez The home run to fly ball rate is unsustainable, but even if it drops by half, it'll probably get him a 30 homer season. With Story, his 162 game average for home runs is 45 home runs. What's stopping him from reaching that mark? Now, before you guys answer on Sanchez and Story, I was doing the math this morning, and what I saw was unbelievable. These guys, I'm guessing, Sanchez had to be the best at his position per game. Scott always does per game. I'm a little bit lazier. I do per plate appearance. And it's not all plate appearances, but it's almost all plate appearances.
I don't know how that's lazier. It's one calculation.
But. Yeah, I don't think there's any question Gary Sanchez was the best at his position on a per game or per plate appearance.
Yeah, by far.
Yeah.
By a full point per game.
But he was better than Mookie Betts, Gary Sanchez, on a per plate appearance.
But he was also far more unsustainable in what he did.
I know. Hold on. I just want to set the scene here. So Sanchez was 0.92 fantasy points per plate appearance. Betts was 0.91. Trout was 0.96. So that's the error that Sanchez was in. Posey was 0.73, which is really good. But Sanchez was so much better than Posey. If you gave Sanchez the same amount of plate appearances as Posey had, he would have scored 556 fantasy points and been the number 12 hitter in points leagues with a lot fewer plate appearances than the guys that would have finished ahead of him. Story
would have like 55 home runs, right? Oh, sorry. Set the scene. Go ahead. Sorry.
Story was what really surprised me because I figured all of his strikeouts would drop down his points total and he would have been a lot better in Roto. But because Story hit 27 home runs and 21 doubles in 97 games, he actually averaged 0.83 fantasy points per plate appearance, which was better than Gene Segura, Manny Machado, and Jonathan Villar, which they were the top three shortstops in fantasy. So I think when you're looking at Sanchez and Story, you probably were talking about the number one players at their position if they had played full seasons. Definitely for Sanchez, I think for Story. What do you guys think about these two sophomores?
Well, I'll just point out, per game, Story was only behind Gene Segura at shortstop. So
okay.
It would have been second there. I mean, like I was saying, if you give Sanchez a full season of bats, it's like 55 home runs or something stupid. And he mentioned the fly ball to home run to fly ball percentage.
Yeah. 40%,
which is not going to happen.
Half of that would be lucky.
I don't think lucky if he's really a 40% hard hit rate guy, playing in a good park.
Yeah. You don't need to have like a great statistics foundation to know that's unsustainable.
Yeah.
So it's just a question of how much he regresses. And I think he could have some significant regression and still edge Buster Posey at the position. I'd bet against it, but I do think he's going to be the biggest home run hitter among catchers this year. Story is, I mean, he's still his own worst enemy with the strikeouts. There was a lot of peaks and valleys during that partial rookie season, but the general trend was still slightly downward from that April.
Well, yeah.
And I think that would have continued. He might be the biggest home run hitter at his position too, but he might also hit 250 or less.
That's the thing with him is you look at his minor league track record and it's actually consistently high BABIPs across the board in the 330 to 350 range pretty much every season, which is not what you would expect for a guy who hits as many fly balls as he does. But he had a 343 BABIP last year, so
yeah.
You know, if he can be a 330 to 340 BABIP guy while hitting for power, and Coors Field will help in that regard, you know, you've got a chance for a better Dan Uggla.
I'm going to take the field against Gary Sanchez in the home runs at the catcher position.
Okay.
Gattis hit 32 last year. I would not expect him to hit 32 this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've thrown around 25 as the over-under in the office.
Scott said 27. I said 24. I think you said 25. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 27 is a fair over-under for Sanchez, and I would probably take the over. I feel very confident saying he's going to get more bats than Gattis this year.
You know, just speaking more broadly here, Story hit 27 home runs in 97 games. Sanchez hit 20 home runs. He actually became the fastest player in baseball history to hit 20 home runs. He tied Wally Burger, who also did it in 51 games. That was back in 1930. By the way, Burger hit 38 home runs in his rookie season. He hit 37 home runs in his next two seasons combined in 301 games. But neither of these guys, Sanchez or Story, ever hit more than 20 home runs in a minor league season, which is shorter than a major league season. But I don't really know how to interpret minor league numbers. You guys,
minor league home run totals are never as high. Like the minor league home run leaders, but even his shorter seasons and not as good, not as many strike throwing pitchers,
and a lot of really extreme parks.
One way I looked at it was in the minor leagues for Sanchez specifically. His home run per plate appearance totals were very, very similar to Greg Bird and behind Aaron Judge. So, that doesn't mean that he's not going to hit more home runs than them in the majors, but I don't believe that 50 games in 2016 should automatically make us think he's going to hit more home runs than them.
And with Story, in 2015, he did have 70 extra base hits in total in 130 games, which is a really remarable number.
Yeah.
I just wanted to remark on it.
thank you for remarking. Okay, so quick news and notes. Brandon Moss, Kansas City signing Brandon Moss, 2 years, $12 million. Is he worth drafting in a roto league? Corner infield, where's he even eligible?
Platoon with Peter O'Brien?
I think Peter O'Brien's probably starting in the minors now.
Come on.
He's platooning with somebody, right, Moss? He's not going to be every day.
If you do, then you're platooning him with Chesler Cuthbert, I guess. I would expect he's going to get 550 plate appearances, which is 500 to 550, which is more than he got last year when he hit, 23 home runs?
Yeah. I don't know. Because I don't know that it's going to go well for him in that big park, being such a...
Well, St. Louis isn't really a good home run park. It's pretty terrible.
Yeah, but he's losing the Cardinals' devil magic.
That's a fact. I forgot about that. No, I don't. If you take him, you're taking him at the very end of the roto draft. I'd rather have Travis Shaw.
Okay. That's Brandon Moss. Brad Miller, likely to play second base this year for Tampa Bay, according to the Tampa Bay Times. They're going to need a first baseman. They've been linked to Chris Carter. Any thoughts on Brad Miller at second base?
Not really. I mean, I don't.
He'll be eligible at three positions, right?
Yeah.
That's nice.
So that's nice. Second base is.
Doesn't really.
I'm already looking
me...
to start multiple second basemen, it seems like every draft. So.
He's gonna regress really hard too. Yeah. It's gonna be ugly.
He's gonna lose the R.
Oh yeah. He's gonna be bad Miller.
Yep.
He's gonna go back to being bad again.
You should all go to CBSSports.com/MLB and check out the all-time MLB postseason team. The best playoff performers in baseball history at each position. Noteworthy, Troy Gloss over George Brett at first base.
I had no idea how crazy Troy Gloss's postseason numbers were.
Yeah, I think it's really unfair that they consider George Brett at first base since he never played first base in the playoffs.
Is that right?
George Brett was a third baseman.
So what am I looking at?
I don't know, but Troy Gloss has an 1154 OPS in the postseason.
That's really good.
I think
they maybe should have given George Brett a chance at third base.
I would guess most of Gloss.
Okay, third base. That's Troy Gloss, first team third baseman over George Brett. I'm sorry.
Brett's numbers aren't even that good.
Yeah, I mean, he only had 1,023 OPS.
10 home runs and 184 plate appearances. You know how many Gloves needed to get to 9? Like 88? Get out of here. George Brett wishes he had the career Troy Gloves did.
Yeah, you know, it's actually a very cool article. Pablo Sandoval, third team, third base. He's one of four players with a three-homer game in the World Series. So,
you think Scott Brosius should be number one, though, right?
He's not even in the others considered. Wow. I don't know. Brosius was a hell of a postseason player. He really was. But, you know, there's no such thing as clutch. Also, Scott took my advice, as I said, on something.
Hold on. Scott Brosius had a career 696 OPS in the postseason.
Yeah, but the clutch hits, Chris. It's all about clutch hits.
Like, he was worse in the postseason than the regular season.
No, he was legendary in the postseason. Just ask any highlight.
Aaron Boone, third baseman. Aaron Boone.
There you go. Yeah. Scott finally watched and finished The Shield, my favorite show of all time. Not Agents of Shield, but The Shield with Michael Chiklis. I always recommend it to people. It is my favorite. It is the best. And Scott, what would you give it? Out of 5 stars, how many stars for The Shield?
Ooh. Don't usually think in terms of stars. I guess maybe like 4.5. I mean, it had the best ending of any series, I think. In fact, it's rare that a series' final season is its best season. I think that was true of The Shield. It got progressively better.
Yeah.
It's hard to get into because the first 3 seasons, I mean, they're fine, but I feel like it doesn't really get great till season 4, and then the final 4 seasons, they just keep getting better and better, and it's awesome. So, I don't know. I wish they had condensed those first 3 seasons into one, is just kind of like getting to know the characters and everything, and then maybe it would be held in higher esteem. But, yeah, if you're willing to get through those first 40 episodes or so.
I don't agree. I think
ringing endorsement.
I think the first season was a little slow.
35 hours of mediocre television.
No, it's an old show, you know. It started in like 2002 or something, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and it feels that first season especially, felt like we're trying to push the envelope. We're going to be really edgy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, all right.
But I think season 2 is when it starts getting great. But anyway, I recommend it to everybody. Let's talk about the draft we did last week. So it's 12-team head-to-head points league. I don't want to go through all the picks, but I will give the first couple of rounds to our listeners so you know just kind of how it's going. And here was round one. Round one. Where are you, round one? You're up here somewhere. Round one. Mike Trout. Jose Altuve to Heath. Heath, why did you take Altuve 2 over Betts or Goldschmidt?
Jose Altuve is really, really good.
Okay.
And I do think that Mookie Betts is going to have a little bit of regression. And Jose might too, but it doesn't look as obvious to me.
Okay.
And he plays second base, most importantly.
Yeah, but I feel like that's an argument against.
Yeah.
Second base in a 1 second baseman league, I have no problem filling that out.
I had no problem filling outfielder out.
Yeah, but outfield is like very elite, and then it gets kind of like Scott took Lorenzo Cain in like round 10 or something.
Yeah, what second baseman were going in round 10?
Well, round 8, you got the Kipnis group, you know, and who did I took Pedroia, my second baseman.
I think Pedroia went later than round 10.
My second baseman was Devin Travis, who I took in round 20.
Piscotti. All drafted in the same round, and Ben Zobrist is the only second baseman in that round.
But, I mean, that's kind of, round 10 is where outfield gets worth the money. Again, I think Adam's right that kind of between round 4 and 5 and like round 9 and 10, there's like, you're reaching for any outfielder you take there. And so if you don't have at least one outfielder by that point, you are panicking.
See, I thought that there were fine number 3 outfielder candidates available in the very last round.
Okay.
That's true. It's deep. It's still a deep position. It's top heavy and deep. There's like no second tier outfielders really.
Yeah. Is it sort of similar to pitcher? Like starting pitcher,
yeah,
right? You're going to get high upside guys late in the draft, but the guys that you take in round 7 or 8, like a Teran or a Tanaka or something like that, you might be a little nervous about the role that they have on your team.
We'll talk about this when we get to the things that I learned from the draft, but I don't know that I totally agree.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so it was Trout 1, it was Altuve 2, Betts 3rd overall, Goldschmidt 4, Kershaw 5, Arenado, Donaldson to Scott, Chris Bryant, Manny Machado, Anthony Rizzo. It seems like that is the top 10 in some order every time we draft, fair?
Yeah, I think maybe top 11 is the same every time.
Right, and then I had the 11th pick, and I was like, this happens every time. I feel like I've had the 11th pick 2 or 3 times, and I'm always like, please, please don't make me take Harper. I don't want to take Harper. Please don't make me take Harper. Let me get Rizzo. And then, of course, Rizzo went 10th. I had to take Harper 11th. I'm better with Harper in a points league than a roto league because he walks so much, but
that might work out for you. You know,
he might be the number one player. I mean,
taking aside the fact that he's been the number one player, I think he probably overperformed a little bit. But No, I'm not so sure with Rizzo if he's even got the same ceiling as Harper. Well, I don't think he does, but
no, he doesn't.
You know, he's never going to steal 17 bases again. And that boosts the 3 year averages that we look at.
You're talking 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Anthony Rizzo is going to have a season where he's the number one player in points leagues.
Maybe, just because of the lineup he plays in.
I feel like Rizzo is like just the epitome of the safe first rounder. Like, he may not actually perform quite like a first rounder, but he's not going to let you down. And then Harper, it's like this great contrast between the two, because yeah. Harper's the ultimate boomer bust first rounder.
Yeah, I mean, so, it's the injury concerns, obviously, that bug me with him, whether it's playing hurt or just getting hurt. But look, I had the 11th pick, Chris had the 12th pick. I much rather would have the 11th pick, because Chris, it probably got a little difficult for you after Harper went off the board, and then you took Votto and Scherzer, 12 and 13.
And, I mean, you talk about safety and upside. Joey Votto, you just take his second halves from the last two seasons and put them together, he's probably the number one player. Somebody who walks that much, someone who hits for such a high batting average, I think he's a fairly safe first-round pick in a points league.
Oh, in a roto league, a categories league, would you have taken, where the walks don't necessarily count, so not an OBP league, would you have gone with Votto in round one?
Maybe not, but even then, like, you're talking about someone who's going to hit for a really high batting average, he's going to score a lot of runs, he's going to drive in a decent amount. That lineup, I don't think, is as bad as we kind of assume. They actually scored a decent amount of runs last season, so, you know, I think it's fine.
Okay.
That might actually be better, actually, if than a head-to-head, because of the way Votto goes about his production. I don't think it's just happenstance that he's better the last 4 months of the year than the first two. He's talked about it. There's a process he goes through, kind of training the pitchers to pitch him where he wants to be pitched by swinging and not swinging at certain things those first couple months. So that could be really frustrating in a head-to-head league, particularly if you're not prepared for it.
Okay,
but it is worth pointing out, because I don't think we realize it, the Reds only scored 9 fewer runs than the Dodgers last year.
Yeah, they traded Jay Bruce.
Didn't. Sure. Halfway through last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not a bad offense.
I mean,
especially in that, like,
they're below average, but it's not so bad that you should be worried about Joey Votto.
Yeah, he scored 101 runs. He drove in 97. Pretty good. Okay, and then you went Scherzer, and let's see. After that, I took Miguel Cabrera. Because of the whole first base thing, you know, and we are going to talk about that. I think that was one of Heath's takeaways. He came up with a different impression of first base.
He changed his mind, which I have no idea what that means. I don't keep a running log of Heath's opinions of first base. So
you don't have to. I'm going to explain it.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I took Cabrera because I thought first base pretty shallow, and there was no way I was getting a great first baseman late in round three. So I got to take him early in round two. Then it was Blackman, Corey Seager, Carlos Correa. Scott took Edwin Encarnacion. Madison, okay, let's talk about what happens here the last half of round two. After Edwin Encarnacion, so it was a bunch of hitters. Scherzer first pick, and then of round two, and then Cabrera, Blackman, Seager, Correa, Encarnacion. Do we get to a point where the hitters just aren't good enough anymore? Because we go Bumgarner, Sale, Price, Syndergaard as our next four picks, and then Heath took George Springer, and then Daniel Murphy. I cannot believe Trey Turner did not get drafted in round two. But yeah, Bumgarner, Sale, Price, Syndergaard, four pitchers in a row, mid round two, followed by Springer and Daniel Murphy to finish off round two. What did you guys make of that little starting pitcher run at that point?
I think it's the way you phrased it is pretty good, that the hitters just aren't of the same caliber as the ones we've seen go off the board up to that point. Trey Turner, I think, is an exception. I would be willing to take him before, maybe not before Bumgarner in this format, but before any of those other pitchers. I think we just reached the stage of the draft where the remaining elite players, definitively elite players, are pitchers.
Okay.
And you want one of the elite pitchers. I don't know if I want to make getting multiple of them a priority, but you know, part of my thing in taking Scherzer there is like you want one of those guys, and the next couple of guys are first basemen, so it's kind of.
Also, this is a one draft sample. We're going to see a lot of times where Price, Syndergaard, Sale,
yeah,
fall to the third round. I wouldn't be surprised if their ADP actually ends up in the third round.
Yeah,
especially Price.
Yeah, the order, I guess, was a little weird. Like, because we have Kluber going at the early round three. I mean, I'd rather have Kluber than Price. I think we all would. So sure. That was. But, yeah. You know, it's the same tier of pitchers, and it becomes personal preference on some level.
I mean, there's guys like Turner. There's guys I think we'll probably see. I wouldn't be surprised if Giancarlo sneaks into the back half of the second round occasionally. We're going to see Pollock sneak into the back half. Carpenter probably will sneak into the back half occasionally.
Chris, or rather Heath, why did you take Springer instead of Trey Turner or Daniel Murphy, I guess? Well, you could have played Turner at outfield. I was going
to
say you had.
No, I definitely could have. I think there's more upside for Springer to have a monster season at some point in the next couple of years. This format is not the best for him, but I still.
It's not a bad one for him, though, because right. He did up the walk rate quite significantly.
And I just think he has. I would not be surprised at all if next year we're drafting George Springer as a first rounder.
I wouldn't either, but I wouldn't be surprised if we were Turner either. And I think one thing. We need to stress more probably since he's not eligible now. He's going to be shortstop eligible. Right. In addition to second base and outfield. I know shortstop is deeper, but you can play him at any one of those positions. It'll still most likely be shortstop. But you know, outfield's kind of thin at the top. Whatever. That versatility really, really adds to his value.
Sure.
And, that needs to be mentioned more since he's not eligible yet.
All right, round three. Now, let's go to our takeaways now. Chris, why don't we... No, Heath. Sorry, Chris. Because I want to do the first base thing.
No, it's fine. Okay.
Hey, Chris, you can just sit this out, all right? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm just going to walk away. It's okay.
Why are you even here?
He's taking his headset off.
Come back, Chris.
Who invited him?
Hey.
All right, Heath, what are your thoughts now on first base?
First, I guess I should tell what my thoughts were, since no one keeps a running log of those.
Nope.
I thought it was pretty clear that we talked a lot last year and already this year, and you've referenced it once in the podcast already, that you really want to get a first baseman in the first two rounds, because you get to a point very quickly where you just don't like any of the first basemen.
Right.
We talked about that a lot. I don't know that I agree with it anymore, though, because when... We got a little bit later in the draft, and I was really okay with some of the values that we were finding. Will Myers in the fifth or sixth round, Chris Davis in the fifth or sixth round, Jose Abreu in the sixth round. I think I'm okay with that.
I agree. Yeah. Those are, I mean, in a vacuum, those seem okay, but they're both high variance first basemen.
Well, who? Because he's mentioned three guys.
Myers, Carpenter. Myers and Davis for sure, and I guess Abreu after the year he just had.
Right.
And there are so many low variants but high end first basemen that if so many of your competitors are going to have that at first base, and if you draft one of those guys and it doesn't work out, like that is a big hole in every matchup. You face. So, I mean, look, sometimes it's not going to work out for you to get a first baseman in the first two rounds, and all you can do is take one of those high variance guys and hope it pays off, and maybe
isn't
it will.
This is the format to take high variance guys, though, isn't it? Like, you
it
should
is,
be able to find a
is,
decent
but,
first baseman on waivers if you really need one.
But I don't think decent is good enough. Especially at that position.
Right.
If I can get Goldschmidt, if I can get Rizzo, if I can get Votto, then that changes the equation.
Yeah.
What about Miggy and Encarnacion? Because
I just don't feel as good about them in the second round. Like, they're just the guarantee that those first three guys are.
Okay. Well, that's probably the difference of opinion, because other than the fact that they're a little bit older, I don't think there's anything from their performance that really should worry you, especially Encarnacion. I mean, and Cabrera's better when he's, well, no, I wouldn't say that.
He's been a little up or down the last few years, but yeah, Encarnacion's 5-year
right
line is as steady as they come.
Yeah, I mean, he had the up and down season last year, but
final numbers were where they usually
are. He was outstanding last year. He's 34 years old. He's changing parks.
Yeah.
The wind will not always be at his back.
Right. Okay, so
metaphorically.
If you don't include Daniel Murphy and Matt Carpenter,
right,
then you've only named like 9 first basemen. When we're talking Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Cabrera, Votto, Encarnacion, Freeman, who seems to go in the third round. Okay, that's 6.
Right.
Then you got your Myers, Abreu, Chris Davis group. That's 9. So now you're talking 3 owners in a 12-team league that are going to reach for Carlos Santana, which some would probably reach. Someone did in this draft.
If he falls back, but, you know, he went in the 4th round, which has never happened, I don't think, in one of our drafts. He's going to go more in that Myers-Davis range.
Beyond it, usually. I think.
Yeah, I don't think, I don't know that that's the case this year.
Yeah, he's probably actually typically more of a steal.
Yeah, but then, you know,
the 34 home runs last year may have changed the equation to where people don't.
Santana is 13th in my rankings.
That's too low.
Maybe, but I look at the guys ahead of him. You know, we've talked about Chris Davis, Will Myers, Jose Abreu. One guy we haven't mentioned, Hanley's going to play DH every day this year. Doesn't that boost him up? Doesn't that reduce the injury risk, make him more likely to play every day?
But he went in that same range. Could it get better for him than it was last year? And
yeah, why not?
Why not? I mean, we haven't seen that, even the version of Hanley we saw last year, since his Marlins days.
Sure, but we're talking about a guy who's had a bunch of injury issues, who's most of them have come while he's been in the field. I can't remember him injuring himself just batting or running the bases. It's always running into a wall or diving for a ball and getting hurt. I feel like we might be overlooking Hanley this year.
Maybe, but he's clearly high variance as well.
Sure.
And I feel like the overall upside is lower.
But like I'm saying, we're already like 13 spots into the position with guys that we still feel have, I would say, elite potential.
Well, I mean, it's I hate to sort of nitpick on this, but it's kind of important. We're 13 spots if you include Daniel Murphy and Matt Carpenter, but most people are probably going to want to play those guys at other positions.
Right.
Seems to turn out that way.
Okay, so we're 11 spots in. Nearly every team has a first baseman at this point, and the next one is either Albert Pujols, Brandon Belt, Adrian Gonzalez. Like, so
that's
one
terrible.
Team. Okay, one it's team scary gets to me. One team gets a not great first baseman,
but look at the other infield spots. Shortstop, I think, is the same way, where one or two teams don't get a great shortstop, but otherwise there's enough to go around in a 12 team league.
I look at shortstop and I've got Addison Russell at number 10.
Yeah, so
I don't
three teams.
That's not great.
Yeah,
it's not. It may be.
But first base is next. I mean, I don't really know how you affect. Like how outfield works in
I see
math. I'm
seven,
just talking about the infield positions.
I see 7 shortstops that I'm really geeked about having.
All right, but shortstop is notoriously shallow. Like second base and third base, you're going to feel a lot better about your number 12 guy. At least your number 11
and
guy.
And we've had drafts in the early going.
Second base, I think that's true. I have DJ LeMahieu 12. I feel very good about DJ LeMahieu.
Chris Davis falls even beyond round 6 and somebody swoops in and takes him as utility, and then that's one less.
Sure.
That's one more person having to settle for a not so great first baseman. So
but if you waited at first base, you made the choice to let him fall past 6. Like, you should have just taken him in round 6 if you were waiting at first base.
All right, let's move on here. This was a good discussion, but I want to get to more topics. Chris, give me a takeaway from the draft.
Well, I don't think my position on this has changed and ever will change, but you can still, you can and still should wait on starting pitcher, especially once you grab one of those elite guys. I think you should make a point in the first 3 rounds of grabbing, you know, someone in the, let's say, down to probably John Lester, maybe Johnny Cueto. After that, I'm not sure I want to go out and get the next tier of guys. I kind of want to wait. There's just a bunch of guys who are fine. They're perfectly usable guys. Guys like Masahiro Tanaka, Kyle Hendricks, Jose Quintana. We had this whole discussion the other day. But I'm not sure how much upside those guys have. And I'd rather just save my draft picks and load my pitching staff with guys who I think have breakout potential, especially in this format, where you only need five starting pitchers.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that because I put the same observation, sort of. Okay, yes, waiting on starting pitcher, but I would like to get one top 8 to 10 starting pitcher,
yes,
which is what you just said. And then, you know, this really came into play because you and I had back-to-back picks. I had 11, you had 12. So here we are in round 3, where I've taken Harper and Cabrera. You took Scherzer with the 13th overall pick and Votto 12th. So I guess you probably weren't going to take John Lester, but you know what? I probably should have considered that when I took John Lester. Damn it. always look at the roster grid and see what the guy picking next to you has and, what you might be able to get in the next round. But anyway, I had Harper and Cabrera and I'm sitting there thinking, do I take Ryan Braun? Do I take Giancarlo Stanton? They were very, very tempting to me. I took Lester, just because I really wanted to have an ace.
Yeah.
And I only regret it because I don't think Chris would have taken Lester and I could have gotten Lester in round 4. But otherwise, I don't regret that pick.
And one thing I do specific player that jumped out to me is Jose Quintana. He was going in probably the 140 to 160 range last year. He went 88th in this one. I think he's probably going to go before the top 100. Does that really make any sense?
Well, Jose
Quintana wasn't a better pitcher last year than he had been.
Yeah, but people, he was notoriously underrated.
His whip was a lot better last year.
But I think we're kind of, you mentioned Jose Quintana, you mentioned Tanaka, you mentioned Julio Teheran. You're not sure if they have the same upside, and that's fine. But you missed kind of this in-between class of pitchers, the Zach Greinke, Dallas Keuchel, Chris Archer.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good class to miss.
No, I feel like there's a group of pitchers there outside of the top 12 who have like a 50-50 shot of being top 12 themselves. I would put all three of those in that category. I feel like the last 3 years we've seen the gap between the haves and the have-nots at starting pitcher widen a little bit more every year, to the point that last year, like, there was maybe like 25, 30 pitchers who averaged more than 12 fantasy points per game, and then every other pitcher in baseball was between 10 and 12 points per start. Like, and some of those have upside, some of them will distinguish themselves, but it's hard to pick out the exact ones. You're going to pick your favorites. Maybe one or two of them will be right. Most of them will probably be wrong.
Right. I guess I'd rather throw my darts later in the draft, get the offensive players who I feel more comfortable with.
But you don't have to throw darts with the offensive players. There is unprecedented depth around the infield, particularly in this format where people aren't having to draft extra infielders for corner infield, for middle infield. We talked about it at second base. We talked about it at
but
third
you're
base.
Still, you're still throwing darts with guys like Zach Greinke, Dallas Keuchel,
Real
Kyle Hendricks.
On the unprecedented depth. That is largely because we have this sample size from last year where we had more middle infielders hitting for power. And so we have more middle infielders that we can project to be really good fantasy players. If that was a 1 year anomaly, we don't have like that depth is based on 2016 numbers.
But if it was a 1 year anomaly, who regresses? You have no idea. You have no idea.
Well, that's part of that's part of our job is to figure out who regresses.
I can't do that. I might as well quit right now if you're asking me to do that.
Gene Segura is going to regress. Would you agree? Jonathan Villar is going to regress.
I don't think that's a foregone conclusion.
I mean, like, Segura's going to regress, but he was the number one shortstop in fantasy. I took him with the 59th pick. So people are building in regression when they draft him. I thought it was interesting that Scott took, I'm looking at how many pitchers? You took like 4 pitchers in your first 7 picks. You went hitter, hitter, pitcher, hitter, pitcher, pitcher, pitcher. Mm-hmm. So three hitters to start in your first 4 picks.
And I still wish I had taken 4 fewer infielders than I did with my first 7 picks.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. And you always seem to know these points leagues. Your pitching staff is Verlander, Chris Archer, Kyle Hendricks, Rick Porcello. We'll just stop
there. That's a lot of dart throws for 4 of your first 7 picks, though, right?
I mean, it's not nearly as big of a dart throw as like a Blake Snell and John Gray.
Yeah, but those are dart throws that you have to take with the 12th round. It's a really small dart.
But I could be taking, in that same range, I could be taking like, Ian Kinsler, Todd Frazier. I mean, those aren't even dart throws at all.
Oh, sure. Ian Kinsler's definitely a dart throw.
Okay.
Well, where's Chris?
Also,
your pitching
Ian Kinsler went in the eighth round.
Like, Chris, how did you fill out your pitching staff, Chris?
What's that?
How did you fill out your pitching staff?
Max Scherzer, Masahiro Tanaka, Lance McCullers, Vince Velasquez.
Oh, wow. I don't like it. I do not like
Jay Happ, Dylan Bundy, Edwin Diaz. I've
too
got some
much.
On the bench.
There's not enough certainty. You got one certainty there.
Yeah.
That's kind of my point. There are very few certainties at starting pitcher. I got four of them.
Well, No, not even close.
You didn't get. You got one. Maybe.
Well, they're higher. Okay,
you got a 33-year-old certainty who was bad for two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah, but Scott definitely has a sturdier pitching staff than Chris.
That's all.
Maybe.
But Chris should have better hitting.
Just 3.5 ERA. It looks a lot less sturdy, right? If Rick Porcello has a 3.9 ERA, it looks sturdy based on last year.
Well, you should have better hitting too. That's the point.
Yes,
I think. I'm not sure his infield is that much better than mine, but I kind of feel like I overspent on infield, as I said earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Scott, give me a takeaway from the draft.
It was more apparent to me in this one than any other that I have to emphasize outfield early, and I already knew that, and yet I still let it slip by me. That's why I kept saying I wish I had taken fewer infielders in the early rounds. Still seemed like there were a lot of infield bargains out there just because there's so much excess and I couldn't justify taking them. And then there came a point where I had to start. Like, my first outfielder is David Dahl. A lot of upside. I like David Dahl fine. He could end up performing like a number one outfielder, but I'd rather him be my second outfielder who performs like a number one outfielder than my first outfielder who does. So I don't, like, part of it was just where the picks lined up. Those first two rounds, I didn't think it was appropriate to take an outfielder when either of my picks came up. I went with Donaldson and Encarnacion, who both, by my own top 300, had slid a couple spots. So that kind of locked me in, because then I had to focus on pitching, and outfield just kind of passed me by. I wonder who my third infielder taken was.
Probably Kinsler in the eighth, wasn't it?
In the first seven rounds. Let's see. Lindor. Francisco Lindor, round four. Which was tough to do because I want a Ledmus Diaz in this format. I think he's undervalued. I mean, he was as good as Lindor on a per game basis, better even, last year, and he normally slips to round seven or eight.
I got him with the last pick of round seven.
So maybe that was the appropriate time to take the outfielder. Let's see who I could have taken at that point. JD Martinez, Starling Marte. I don't like Marte in this format. Carlos Gonzalez. No, I don't even really feel like it would have been justifiable to take an outfielder there. So it's kind of like, I guess the ideal, if we're summing up everything I've said this podcast, is with your first two picks to go first baseman outfielder or outfield first base, but you know, those first two rounds are so choreographed and you don't want to do anything. Like it feels a little too early to start playing the position scarcity game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough situation. I don't hate my team. I just wish I had a better outfield.
Yeah, I don't even know how much in head-to-head position scarcity matters all that much even.
With all the depth in the infield, yeah. It used to matter a lot. It used to matter a lot when, you know, there were only three good shortstops. And,
yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't, second base wasn't so deep, third base wasn't so deep, but now there's always going to be somebody good to fall back on in this format.
Yeah, and that's why one of my favorite picks is a guy that I have pretty much never owned, never picked, and always felt he went too early, but it was Buster Posey, who I'm used to seeing going late in the second round. I took him with the second pick of the fourth round. And, you know, I look at my team and I got Devin Travis as my starting second baseman. I took him in the second to last round. I don't know. I mean, like, it's not my favorite team, but I think it's because it's kind of like taking a tight end early and being really weak at like second wide receiver. And you go, well, but I have Gronkowski. That's the thing. Like, I have Posey, and there were a few catchers last year. I remember, Scott, you were taking a look at, the best rosters or the teams that were winning and in our podcast points league, which is this format, head-to-head points, 12 teams. And I think, like, the three best teams all had the three best catchers. Yeah. So, Posey, I don't think should go in the fourth round. Feels more like a third round pick to me, but yeah, I'm buying into it more. Catcher and closer, I might take different approaches this year.
I think closer, there's just so much depth.
Yeah, but I am tired.
There's a lot of young guys that
so much elasticity.
It's a position that I have been burned on 2 years in a row. And what has happened is, like, I've gotten off to these good starts in these podcast points leagues, and it's because I've gotten a lot of saves. Like, I don't really care about peripherals so much.
That's impossible to predict.
I know, but not if you get the elite closer. You're going to get a lot of saves if you get an elite closer on a great team.
Yeah, if you drafted Andrew Miller last year.
Like,
he was a closer, and then he wasn't.
Chapman.
Chapman was their closer.
Miller closed for a month. I drafted Kimbrel in, I think, the ninth round.
I mean, Jairys Familia led the majors in saves last year.
Okay, but if you draft Kimbrel, if you draft Jansen...
Kimbrel, really? Kimbrel got a lot of saves last year?
Well, he got hurt.
He missed a month with a...
Right, but that's the thing, is if a closer misses a month, or his team goes on one of those streaks like the Blue Jays did 2 years ago, where they didn't even have a save opportunity.
There's ifs at every position.
But that's an if that's based on the scarcity of a specific stat.
The difference
between a really good season and a mediocre one might be one save opportunity every 15 games.
I look at this, and Wade Davis went at the very end of the 10th. Edwin Diaz went at the very end of the 11th. Sungwon Oh went in the 13th. There are a lot of possible elite closers going well after that first tier goes. You don't have to take one in the 8th round.
I don't think Ken Giles even got drafted.
15th.
Okay, yeah.
Ken Giles went in the 15th. Kelvin Herrera went in the 14th. All of those guys could be top 8.
Those guys could all be top 3.
I feel like you want to roll with the elasticity, unpredictability of the position. If your goal, and I think your goal in every draft should be to maximize the return of every pick.
But I don't really want to wait past round 15. Like, that group of guys is the group that I want.
Sure.
I don't want to go to the group after that, because then I don't know what I'm getting.
You don't want your number one closer to be Tony Watson.
Yeah.
I agree. But, if you're the guy taking Kenley Jansen in round 6 versus Edwin Diaz in round 11, I mean...
No, I wouldn't take a closer. I wouldn't take a closer in round 6. I would not do that.
Kenley went the last pick of round 8.
Yeah, Kenley had 47 saves last year.
Was he the first closer taken? No, Britton went in round 7.
Danny Duffy went in round 5, or round 6.
Yeah,
Britton went round 7. Different situation, Sparp.
He's the best reliever in points leagues.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at 55 minutes, guys, so...
I can do both of mine in one quick shot.
Do it, go.
Because mine were, we need more data, and you can take more risks earlier, because there's so much safety at the end of the draft. We need more data because we try, like, my rankings right now are not necessarily where you should draft somebody, because we have no idea what ADP is. I think when we got to my final 2 or 3 picks, there were like 60 players in my top 250 that still hadn't been drafted.
Yeah, I think we all had quite a few. Like, the first page of our ranking, so maybe Scott. Scott's much better at this than we are, but I had a lot of players who hadn't been drafted, and it made me realize I have to move guys around.
But like, I took Odubel Herrera and Yonhervis Solarte at the 18-19 turn. I'm going to feel pretty good if I have to start either one of those guys. I took Marcelo Ozuna in the 20th round. I don't know why we don't think he's going to be a top 40 outfielder.
Yeah.
So
is a top 40 outfielder someone who you really want to start in this format? The threshold to be the top team in a head-to-head league, the threshold for a starting caliber player is so high.
Someone's got to start a top 40 outfielder. If you get like that.
Yeah, but
he's not talking about targeting Marcelo Zuna in the 12th round.
He was saying, I don't know why he can't be a top 40 outfielder. Like, he's aspiring to be a top 40 outfielder. You want the guys who are aiming to be top 20 outfielders. I don't feel like the ceiling is high enough.
I'm sure Marcelo Zuna wants to be a top 20 outfielder.
I'm sure he does too, but You know what I mean. Have the kind of capability.
If I have Odubel Herrera, if I have all three of those guys, Marcelo Zuna, Herrera, and Solarte in my lineup, you're not winning with that lineup.
They were the 18th, 19th, and 20th.
It doesn't matter. Like they're
not in your lineup.
They're borderline players in these formats. They all have to break out. I mean, based on what we've seen,
you starting your 18th, 19th, and 20th round pick?
Those are usually pitchers for me because those guys have upside. I'll tell you who they were. I mean, Yoán Moncada.
You're
dropping Yoán Moncada.
Okay, so you're talking about them as fallback options, Heath. Which is fine.
None of them are my starting
lineup.
You're
talking about taking more risks early. Trey Turner in round two, if for some reason he's miserable. Then you could start Marcelo Zuna. I can't imagine this scenario.
These are my last three picks, Heath. Yoán Moncada, who is just let's take a flyer and see what happens.
You can drop him as soon as somebody gets hurt.
Devin Travis, who is my starting second baseman. And Shin-Soo Chu, who has been elite in this format. So, like, I think those guys have a chance to be must-start guys.
I prefer drafting pitchers late, but that goes with my strategy where I'm just taking shots.
Right.
Pitching has so much variance.
I'd rather take pitchers, too, even being on the other end of the high end.
There's always going to be a few late-round guys who turn into studs. I got Joe Ross and Robert Kesselman in my last few picks, and I think both those guys have a chance to turn into very valuable pieces.
Yeah. All right, Scott, closing thoughts?
You want another takeaway?
Well, we got like a minute left, so whatever. You can sing a song, whatever you want to do. You can sing like a Falcons fight song.
I feel like second base, every draft we do, I don't approach it properly. I took Kinsler in round 8 in this format, and Kinsler's on my bus list, but it was round 8 for a second baseman who averaged nearly as many points per game as like Robinson Cano last year, and it's just like, I hate the breakdown of it because there are 14, I think, players who could be great startable options, but obviously the back end of that top 14 are the aging players like Ian Kinsler and Dustin Pedroia, and like I feel like they'll probably be fine, but it's just they're at an age where they could just collapse too. And so if there are that many quality second basemen, do you want to be the guy who takes the chance at second base on one of those guys? You could be maximizing your return at that position if you wait till round 8 to 12 to draft one of them. But at the same time, you could be the only one without a good second baseman too, because there's a huge drop off at second base after that. It's frustrating, and I still haven't figured out exactly the way I want to go with it. I just feel like I always draft it earlier than I should.
Yeah, I mean, I screwed that up. I did not want Devin Travis to be my starting second baseman.
Could be really good, though.
Could. Chris, final thought?
I think outfield you can still approach like starting pitcher. You want one elite guy, but I honestly think you can wait.
Yeah, but the one elite guy thing is pretty important, you know, because there is an elite tier at outfield that's pretty shallow, right?
Yeah, like I took Ryan Braun and Giancarlo Stanton at the 3-4 turn, and I think they could both be elite, but I think there's a lot of risk there. I'm not sure it was the right way to go.
Just one of them instead?
Yeah.
I think I could go with that. I got zero of them, so that's why I want to focus on outfield more next time.
All right. Well, when is next time, Draftman?
Probably this week.
Got to do Roto.
Yeah, we do need to do a Roto. We've done too many head-to-head points drafts relative to Roto.
No
drafts.
More head-to-head points drafts.
Let's do a head-to-head categories draft.
Yeah.
Let's start with just a Roto.
We'll just call it.
Get one of those five outfield leagues in the bag.
Maybe we can make OBP a category.
Whatever. Okay. That's it for Chris, Scott, and Heath. I'm Adam. Talk to you later in the week, probably tomorrow. We'll be back with another episode of Fantasy Baseball Today.
See ya.